I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, welcome to Film Fandango, the film podcast. I'm David Reed. This is Merrick Larwood.
Happy Valentine's Day, David.
Happy Valentine's Day to you too, Merrick. Is it Valentine's Day?
We are just recording this like a day or so beforehand, but today is Valentine's Day.
Then I'm glad I'm spending it with you.
Yeah.
That's
good. And what do you think of my present I'm going to get you?
Well, I don't want to guess what it is, but I mean, it's certainly not a CD from something shaped like that.
No. It's something that's been pummeled into a CD shape.
Yeah. Is it breathing? It looks like it's breathing.
Now, what would you do if I got a tattoo of you?
Where would you get it?
But it was just weird, like on my calf muscle.
Okay, but of my face?
Yeah.
And what would I do?
Yeah, if I just said, I've got this, I hope you don't mind, and I pulled up my...
I think, against your hopes, I would mind.
Okay.
I think our friendship would become sort of terse and then distant.
In that sort of strange sounds in the background is Buddy, David's dog, who's very excitable today. So if you hear any odd sounds, this that was me, but
was
other
married.
Sounds like that. It's not me getting excited about films. Anyway, back to the tattoo quickly. So would you force me to...
Oh, I can't force you to do anything. Your body is your business, Merrick, but I would question why you'd want it done. You know, it's for life. A tattoo's okay. For life.
Well, I'll just leave my trousers down then today. I mean, well, not down, but in...
My face will age and crag like a painting in an attic, whereas your calf tattoo will stay youthful forever.
Yeah, you're right. It might sag a little bit.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're not here to talk about tattooing each other's faces onto our body parts.
Not this week. We're here to talk about films. And we've seen some more films this week. We are still on the road to the Oscars. I'm sorry if you're not a fan of the Oscars and we keep banging on about it, but it's sort of a neat format point. But we've just been trying to catch up with as many of the Oscar nominees as we can. To that end, Merrick, you've been to the cinema this week.
Yes, I went to the cinema. I went to my local Muswell Hill IGN.
Your favourite?
No mistakes this week.
Hey, they're clearly fans of the show.
It's my local cinema I go to. Generally, something bad wrong happens whenever I go there. Although I did see some people did the most annoying thing possible to other people. Oh. Which is, you know, it's a pretty empty cinema. It's a three-screen cinema.
Yep.
In the smaller, one of the smaller screens.
And they sat next
people.
To them.
Well, there was loads of space.
Yeah.
And there was just two rows where there was two people and then one person. And they went and sat in front just...
Oh, that's the worst. Everyone knows that if there's very few people in, but you want to sit somewhere in the middle,
yeah.
You sit one to the side.
It was the
Everyone
most
knows
incredible...
That.
I got annoyed for the people. This poor woman who was sitting there. I think, what, are you crazy? And they came in literally as the... What's it called? The
screen.
Not the screen, but that bit when they put the what the age certificate is and the signing, but the local sort of...
Oh, yeah.
What is the name for that?
I don't know. I guess it's the certificate, isn't it?
The certificate comes up,
yeah.
And it came in just then and just sat there right in front of it. I would have said something.
Yeah.
Anyway, I went to see Dallas Buyers Club, which has been nominated for an Oscar. Matthew McConaughey is nominated for Best Actor in it. Jared Leto is nominated for Best Supporting Actor... it is directed by Jean-Marc Vallée, and I don't know if that's pronounced properly. So it's based on a true story about this sort of guy called Ron Woodruff. Woodruff? Woodruff. and he is sort of an electrician. He lives in a trailer park. He's a bit of a sort of
wide boy.
Yeah, and he works at the.
He's a gobshite.
Yeah, he works at the local rodeo place as well. So, and he has sex with lots of women. Anyway, he contracts AIDS. HIV positive, which he finds out after he gets knocked out or he collapses, and the story is that he's given, this is all in the trailer, so I'm not spoiling it. He's got 30 days to live, the doctors say, and they prescribe this drug called AZT, and he thinks it's having a bad effect on him, so he basically locates another drug through a series of incidents that happen and ships that back in to America.
And it's unlicensed, isn't it? And they're
it's unlicensed by the FDA, which is the Federal Drugs Authority, I think it's called. So he, even though it's not illegal, it's unlicensed, so you can't sell it. So
it's a big business in the States as well, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, and he ships that back and forms this club where people join the club and pay for membership rather than selling it. So it's about his story, really. And Jared Leto's plays a gay sort of a...
Transsexual, isn't it?
Transvestite, sort of. Transvestites when they've
when they dress up, yeah. But transsexuals when they've had operations. Yeah. Is he not a transsexual in that?
He's a trans. You never see him at urinal, which is always a good way of testing someone.
It is a good way of testing someone. If you doubt the woman you're dating, send her to have a wee at a urinal. See what she does.
Yeah.
It's what Columbo would do.
I hate that laugh. It's when I listen back to this, I hear myself, and I want to punch myself in the face.
Luckily, you can at that moment.
I can, yeah. I normally listen back to it at the gym to check to see how annoyed I get with myself.
Oh, you can really get a burn on listening to the Film Fandango podcast.
Yeah. Well, I'm rowing. So if you want, I know what you're doing, but I'm normally rowing, listening to my own voice. It'll be quite a surreal moment next week on Valentine's Day.
Why don't you play a cox? Why don't you just give yourself a few strokes right now? Heave!
I'll do that.
Come on, Marek, you can do it!
So this film is probably, I think, one of the best I've seen, of the Oscar nominees I've seen. Really impressive. I think Matthew McConaughey has, and he was in Mud last year, and he's sort of been on. It's noted that he started to move away from his romantic roles.
Well, stop playing the straight man and starting to play the interesting characters. I mean, people talked about how good he was in Wolf of Wall Street as well, just how sort of strange and weird and funny.
Well, in Wolf of Wall Street, we talked about that last week. He lost tons and tons of weight, so he looks physically ill in this, and the skin is just hanging off his skeletal form.
He looks like a sort of sick little bird.
Yeah, it's odd how it completely transforms him losing that weight.
Yeah, yeah.
And he becomes just. He is an incredible performance, and it doesn't. The exposition, there's no exposition in it where it doesn't overtell the story. It's all done in looks. It's directed really, really well, where just a small movement or a look here explains it. Does what, you know, in some poor films the script would take ages to do. Jared Leto's quite incredible.
Really?
Yeah.
Because he's somebody who's never really shown off before. He's always played the pretty boy.
Yeah.
You know, he's Fight Club. He utterly forgettable, really, apart from for a scene where he's beaten to a pulp for being pretty. Like, it's not a scene he excels in. It's just something that happens to his character.
Well, stop.
And he was the boyfriend in My So-Called Life that launched the career of Claire Danes back in the 90s.
Yeah, he's in that weird drugs film, wasn't it called? What's the one that people like? I can't remember what it's called.
I don't know.
Some listeners will know some weird bit when he plays a drug addict, which is quite well liked. I didn't really like it. Anyway, he basically. Matthew McConaughey comes from a really sort of homophobic, sort of anti-gay, sort of where men are men sort of area. So his pairing with Jared Leto is really interesting to watch, and the fact that they hate each other is quite comic as well, the looks between them. It's an odd relationship, isn't it? It's not that they fall in love, it's two completely disparate people forced into a situation because of the disease they have.
Yes.
And they get along and have a great on-screen chemistry. And I think they're both nominated for Oscars, and I think they should, on the basis of what I've seen, I think they should both win.
Wow, so, and you said this is your favourite film out of the Oscars lot as well.
I think Captain Phillips is very good. I think this is, my only fault in this is a change from at the start. Matthew McConaughey's character, Ron Woodruff, is quite monstrous.
Right.
And at the end, he's almost too, the monster disappears.
Entirely, yeah.
Yeah, and I think whether that's realistic, because at the start, he is very, very unlikable. But it's such a brave performance, and it's compelling to watch, and sad, and educational as well. I think one man's fight for what he against the system, which is I've done quite a lot in films, but it's all based on a true story. And the FDA were using a drug which was toxic, and they stopped this man. They stopped people from having vitamins to be able, things to be able to actually improve their lives. It was.
When's it set? When was this story?
It must be in the 80s, I think.
Okay.
It must be in the 1985. It's set in 1985 Dallas.
Okay. It's one from the trailer I really wanted to go and see, and I still will go and see it. Like, it certainly strikes me as one of the more interesting offers for the Oscar for best film this year, because the others all seem fairly safe bets for a nomination, apart from American Hustle, that doesn't really make any sense why it's got one. But
yeah, I think the difference between American Hustle and Wolf of Wall Street and this, and I suppose you can compare it quite a lot to the Wolf of Wall Street, because that's a true story as well.
Yeah,
where that was more gratuitous and more showy. I really felt that the story was told well, and I didn't feel it was. It's a fine line between actors looking like they're doing amazing acting, looking like they're thinking they're doing the amazing acting. I'll give my example on this. It's like, yeah, Nicole Kidman in recent years is the prime example of someone when they're acting. I can't watch her without thinking about her, almost watching herself, thinking, yes, how great she is.
Very self-conscious vanity acting, Nicole Kidman, I think.
It's odd, is it just me? Is it?
No, I've always found her like that. I can't watch her in anything either. I always find her very... am I in my light? Yes, I'm in my light.
I can almost
see
that.
I'm going to
be
serious now. You can see the cogs moving in her eyes. Like, yeah.
Is that just us projecting that onto her or not?
Well, there's maybe it is, but there's some quality she's giving off where I don't believe a word of it. And I never have done. I find her very self-conscious.
Is anyone else like that?
I'm sure there are. I mean, there are people who just wouldn't, but that's a slightly different thing.
Yeah. This is worse than being wooden, that sort of acting where you... And I think there's tiny touches of it in American Hustle at points, and that's what put me off it. I don't know if I've gone crazy.
No, I don't think you have. I think it's not being wooden. It's not being unable to act. It's the fact you're transparently a liar, I think, is what comes across. You just go, nah, rubbish. You don't care about him. You're not sad about that. Rubbish. I'm trying to think who else, but she's definitely my number one culprit for it.
When I watch her, I almost see her just walk in her imagination, walking up that award, the steps to pick up her award. It's really odd.
Halle Berry's a bit like that, I find. Okay. She's a bit she's better, but she is a bit like that. I find her very kind of, I'm going to be really moved by this next moment.
Yeah.
I find her a bit cringy.
I think maybe what helped, maybe the weight loss in Ian Dallas Buyers Club did help the fact that he does look ill and is transformed. And it's shocking to see that. It's shocking to see actors like Matthew McConaughey and Jared Leto just completely transformed by this their skeletal features.
It's interesting, isn't it? The weight loss and gain. I mean, what must it do to the actors psychologically so that they are genuinely in a different mindset and mind space when they're performing than they were previously in the bodies they were comfortable with?
Well, Christian Bale does it a bit.
He does it quite a lot.
In The Machinist, was it Machinist?
Machinist is when he really lost all of that weight. But and then bulking up to play Batman to a size he simply wasn't previously in all of his stuff. And then Charlize Theron in Monster, of course, famously putting on loads of weight to be almost unrecognisable.
Yeah.
It's odd, isn't it? I mean, the press tend to treat it just a bit like a stunt, almost like it's part of the publicity machine, not part of the film itself. But I tend to not agree with that. I think it can be very powerful or shocking to see somebody you're so used to being, you know, in the public eye looking so different.
Yeah.
I think that's what it was.
It unsettles you immediately
and you start to take notice.
But that's the first, your very first impression is you're shocked by seeing someone's change physically. I mean, I can't remember Tom Hanks in Philadelphia. He didn't really lose weight. He just got pale. Did I can't remember.
It's been so long since I've seen it.
It'd be interesting to watch that again and see whether that interpretation of AIDS has dated or been over sort of has changed.
It's impressive in Raging Bull as well, you know, where he goes from being so muscly to so fat. But Robert De Niro's extreme almost looks like a fat suit. It is so extreme.
Yeah, you know?
No, it is. It is interesting. And I do... It is a lot more affecting than prosthetics. Prosthetics always take me out of the fiction.
And in... we're talking about American Hustle and Christian Bale. He's got a fake belly in that, which just looks like a slab of plastic.
Does it?
It's odd.
Like a fake pregnancy suit he's
got on.
You can tell if it's someone's belly. You can see it just in the jowls or in, you know...
The problem is
around
your
eyes.
It affects the whole weight of your whole body.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it'd be impressive if someone could just put it on.
Well, my dad
around
does
the waist.
That.
Really, just
it's incredible.
At the waist.
His waist is. My family have got just really big bellies. I'm trying to fight it. I'm trying so hard.
Keep rowing, Mary. Keep rowing.
But Jared Leto apparently stayed in character for the whole of. For the whole of filming for this.
Wow.
I went a bit mental afterwards and had to... I saw a good interview on Graham Norton's show, which for people who don't listen, in the UK is like a chat show.
It's like our Conan or Letterman equivalent, really, I guess.
And Matthew McConaughey was talking about the weight loss there, and he was quite saying he did it gradually, and it was done really, really healthily, so it wasn't a big thing. It was over a period of of months. But he said that Jared Leto went a bit sort of nuts doing it because he got so into character.
Is that Tina Fey and Amy Poehler joke about his weight loss, saying Matthew McConaughey lost £40 to be in Dallas Buyers Club, or as women call it, being in a movie?
Yes, that does say something. I think it's... is it...
What? Come on, you've got bored with your own words or thoughts.
I don't think fast enough to actually be able to think and talk at the same time. I've noticed that. I'm sure you can go back and cut that bit, won't you?
Sure, yeah.
You won't?
Yeah, I'll definitely do that.
A lot of the time in this podcast, I find I say you'll cut that bit and it's still there.
I only cut the hate crimes.
Okay. So I really recommend this film. I think it's great. I think it's not patronising about sort of homosexuality either. It feels an honest... It doesn't feel too actory, and the performances are great, and it's a good film, a really, really good film.
We'll do our proper Oscar predictions in 2 weeks' time before the Oscars, but you said you would want them. I know, I realise this is different to your actual predictions, but you would want Matthew McConaughey, Jared Leto and Dallas Buyers Club to win.
I think I still haven't seen Her or Philomena. And I think Captain Phillips is a good film. I think, but action films are never trendy. You know, they're never cool enough to win. I think my favourite film was still Blue is the Warmest Colour, but that wasn't even put forward for...
Best foreign language?
No, they didn't enter it.
Ah,
that's
okay.
Why I found out that. So that's still the best film I've seen. I think in terms of male performances, which I think haven't been as good as a lot of female candidates this year.
Yeah.
But other than Tom Hanks, I think that Matthew McConaughey and Jared Leto should get it. Leto's got all the press and buzz. But I think to carry a film, which McConaughey does, is a bigger achievement to sustain over that length of time.
And to dare to carry a film and be interesting, to be flawed and strange. Like, it's so safe to be... stop squeaking that crocodile. It's so safe to... just play the everyman, you know, straight down the line character and know that the audience won't find you offensive or unlikable. But to then actually dare to be interesting in the leading role, I think, is worthy of praise.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, how many Marics?
I give it... I'm looking in my film book now. What did I give
it? Don't look back over your thing.
I was torn between 8 and 9.
Okay. 8.5?
High, very high.
A high 8.5.
My only problem was he was a monster at the start, and he plays it brilliantly. And I know it's harder when you're doing a biopic. I don't know how you say it. You've got some poetic license to change things, but you have to be.
But it has to be believable, otherwise you break your story. Yeah. Okay, but that's high praise indeed. Have we got any letters?
Yes, we've got some letters.
Who from these letters?
Well, do you know what?
What?
We always like hearing from people who listen to our podcast all around the world.
That's right.
Someone's written in from a very special place.
Well, do you want to read this one?
I've been talking a lot, so maybe you should read it.
Oh, okay. Fine. What accent shall I do it in? Do they say...
Well, I think it's from Antarctica, so just do it cold.
Really cold.
As if you're cold.
Oh, as if I'm actually cold.
Yeah, let's move it. Let's go do that thing.
David, Danielle and Marek. Danielle's not with us anymore, sorry.
About 6 months ago.
6 months, she's up. She was back though, wasn't she?
Yeah.
I thought I'd send a quick note of thanks for keeping me entertained while I spend long hours in the field watching and counting penguins down on Bird Island, South Georgia. With very limited internet, I have to rely on a friend sending me podcasts and new films once or twice a year. Hence, I'm some way behind on both, which actually syncs them up pretty well. We have film nights here twice a week, and it's been fun catching up with some less well-known recommendations. During the winter, each year there is a 48-hour film festival where all the bases of various nationalities are invited to create a 5-minute film over a weekend. This can be on absolutely anything, but has to include 5 elements: a character, line, objects, etc. We had great fun making and watching them all. Ours can be found here. We will post the link up on our Facebook page. Along with a few of my favourites. Keep up the good work, Jerry from the Arctic base.
The Arctic cool. Or Antarctic?
And what was it? It was the one with the penguins, so Antarctic. Incredible. Antarctic base, amazing. Amazing.
And thank you for sending those films. Great, they're really great.
We will post them. We'll post them on Facebook for all of our listeners to enjoy as well.
That impression could have been someone on the toilet.
Yeah, I'm pretty cold when I'm on the toilet. But
it would have been someone on the train who needs to go, like a tube underground train who needs to go to the toilet.
I'm so sorry, but I need to pull the cord, both metaphorically and literally. Yeah, no, that's me being cold. That's me. Okay, that's me cold. Do you not get cold?
Do you want to read a letter like you've been on the toilet?
I just did. What's this one? Have we got one from Argentina?
Oh, yes, we have, yes.
Why don't I read that one?
Go on, you can read this one.
Buddy's giving me a hug. Come on, down. I need to pretend to be Argentinian. Right. Okay. What's this? Wow. Great surname. This one's from Lucina.
What's her surname?
Giacopuzzi or something.
Giacopuzzi.
Sounds more Italian.
Yeah, I can't do that.
Okay. Hello, David and Marek. I've just got done listening to your reviews of The Wolf of Wall Street. As I was saying, saving it until I got to watch the film myself. I was going to watch American Hustle, but since the reviews I've heard about, it were pretty much exactly the same as Marek's, I decided to give another Oscar nominee the chance. So I went to The Wolf. I didn't have any definite expectations about it. All I knew was that I should be very careful whom I saw it with, because it would probably affect our relationship from then on. Basically, what I'm saying is that it only takes a couple of butt cock sniffing scenes to see who your true friends are. Anyway, I thought the film was quite entertaining, and some of the slow motion scenes were really good snapshots of the key elements of the film. But here's why I'm writing. Yes, the film is incredibly misogynistic without redeeming itself, which I think is something you should be very careful about as a filmmaker. There's nothing that will put me off a film faster than gratuitous sexism, just to make the male lead stand out. However, since
This film is about depicting excesses and the rise and fall of a money craze addict. I thought it didn't really need a moral at the end. I think we should hope the audience understands that. What's more, I don't think a moral at the end would have even fit the film. It would have seemed quite out of place given the nature of it. So, my question to you guys is, do you think it's the duty of every filmmaker or storyteller to teach a lesson to the audience at the end? Can't we just have stories where the viewer is the one to judge whether it's right or wrong or somewhere in between? I'm an avid listener of the podcast and I'm glad I finally mustered up the courage to write to you. I hope you keep going for a long time, mostly because I'm looking forward to witnessing Marek's slow descent into apathy. Much love to you. Ciao. And that is from Lucina. Good question.
What you didn't see then, what you can't think of when Dave was reading that, was his left hand was quite
gesticulating. I do that whenever I do voice
Argentinian
work.
Left hand?
No, I was holding the laptop with my right hand. It would have been one or the other. I do it when I'm doing voice stuff, and I think it's from being a drummer, because it's how I understand the rhythm of what I'm saying. So I do it like this all of the time, so that I know what I'm doing.
You do the awful thing when they do the notes.
No, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't do that. No, it's something about, I don't know, it's weird, but yes, I was gesticulating. That wasn't me doing an impression of the ethnicity. Should all films have a message or moral at the end? No. Simply put, I think if the simpler your story is, the more childlike it is, the more it's like a fairy tale, then yes, it can help to sum up at the end for a more childish or emotionally less sophisticated audience what it was about, what we've learned. I think in kids' films, it can be incredibly important not to just have a good time, but be learning something along the way. As we get more sophisticated as adults and films that are intended for an adult audience, then things don't become so clear. Maybe there's not always a clear lesson to be told. Certainly with my documentaries, I don't like polemic. I like to be shown the situation as starkly and really as possible and then make up my own mind.
Mm.
And I think the same is true for fiction as well.
Mm.
Like, I think when things... it's not always about what is left at the end either. I think films can often be entirely morally bankrupt as they go through, as they try and have their cake and eat it by saying, aren't these people awful? But isn't what they're doing exciting and fun? The filmmaker isn't sophisticated enough to get away with it.
I agree with you. I think you don't need a moral story. But I think the opposite, and I think, is it Roland Barthes or something? I can't remember who did it. Someone I studied, the only thing I remember from when I read English about this, it's called The Death of the Author.
Oh, yeah.
So as soon as you put a bit of creative work out there, I think I've spoken about this before, it's no longer yours. It's all about whoever reads it, it's how they perceive it. So it changes. Nothing ever can be sort of a solid
thing. Yeah, and if you can just make something evocative without actually being about anything, and people will bring their own interpretations to it, and that will be just as valid as, you know.
What I do is about. I'm just playing devil's advocate. The only thing that annoys me is when I watch a film which does feel unfinished. So it's almost lazy. I can't think of examples where they're almost like, oh, you decide what happens. You think, well, do you know what? Because you couldn't be bothered to... It's quite...
But again, to play devil's advocate to your advocate,
devil your advocate in a minute.
As Terry Gilliam said on numerous occasions, and he's not the only one to have this opinion, is that films that tie everything up nicely at the end don't leave you with any questions. You know, so therefore they are by their nature less provocative, less interesting. They leave you with a happy feeling to go away into the night and never think of that film again. Whereas ones where they leave you thinking are actually potentially more valuable.
Yeah, yeah.
But you're right. My absolute bugbear is when a film has been about nothing or has been about something ineptly, and then they just add a voiceover over the end to tell you how to feel and what it was all about. And I think that's the worst of both worlds, where they've made it about nothing, and then add, in the end, it was friendship that saved my life. You say, yeah, we got it. Shut up.
I think that's quite a good ending, then. So this podcast, we said, in the end,
it's how all Danny Boyle films start and end. And I think he's an incredibly talented director, and that particular tool he keeps using, I cannot stand. Because all of his films start with a voiceover and end with one. Or in the case of Slumdog Millionaire, with text, but it's doing the exact same job. I don't need to be told how to feel at the end of a film. I don't.
So, Dan, if you're listening, please please stop doing that.
Stop doing that. And in the end, the Olympics.
And there was some sort of enjoyment, some Schadenfreudistic enjoyment of my gradual descent towards apathy.
Hey, at least it's only a descent towards apathy. I mean, you should be happy with that.
I don't really care.
I mean, your descent's not even successful.
I was trying to sound apathetic then.
Oh, I see.
Okay, well, have you been to the... have you seen a film?
Well, I've been trying to catch up with, again, more of the Oscar nominations, but you've covered a lot of the Best Picture ones. I didn't want to retread old ground, so I watched one of the Best Foreign Language nominations.
Oh, yeah.
Which is the Danish entry, The Hunt.
Oh, I've seen... And this has been... It's quite odd, 'cause it's been out for quite a long time, this,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
I saw it last year.
Mads Mikkelsen plays it's a Danish film in Danish. It's Mads Mikkelsen of Casino Royale fame and Hannibal, the TV series, plays a school teacher who, by a series of unfortunate mistakes, only very few, very slight accidents, circumstances, ends up a rumour going around that he has touched one of the kids at the school, and it's just that spiralling out of control
Kids is sort of falls in love with him and has like an odd relationship with him, doesn't she?
When he realises that something's going on with her, he quite rightly, you know, says, you know, no, that's only for mummies and daddies, you know, and she doesn't take it well because she's a child.
Yeah,
so he does the right thing at every point, really. And then it just escalates, doesn't it? She makes up
a rumour about him. Doesn't she report him as something? Or says that she saw...
I mean, it's complicated and really harrowingly quite believable.
Yeah.
And then it's the witch hunt, The Hunt refers to, really, that ensues in this village because people are... In these cases, because it's so extreme and so heinous a crime, people never want to doubt the child is telling the truth.
Yeah, it's quite the scary... It's probably the scariest thing. It completely destroys his life. So it's quite a scary thing. It's the worst thing that can happen, being accused of being a paedophile.
Incredible, isn't it? And such a tricky subject as well.
Yeah.
And really, I think it's come into... public consciousness so much because we have, by the sheer amount of it, we've been forced to address it and discuss it and talk about it for the first time. It's clearly gone on, you know, it's been apparent in societies for decades and decades and decades, but it's only now that we're actually going, well, what, how do we deal with this?
Yeah, well, there was The Woodsman with Kevin Bacon.
Yes.
Which I thought was a really interesting, brave film.
He plays sex offenders quite often, Kevin Bacon.
Yeah.
He?
When he's not doing EE adverts.
No, he plays one in that.
They're all of his characters in his mobile phone adverts. Yeah.
Have you seen that one? They only showed it, I think, once, where it's all of Kevin Bacon's characters over breakfast, and it's the Woodsman and the Screw from Sleepers and the Hollow Man, who was a rapist, of course. And it's all of them together.
Oh, wasn't it? But the Hollow Man's actually in the advert.
He is, and he's a rapist.
He's an invisible rapist.
Yeah.
Let's take him to the cinema then.
Yeah. And then sit on his lap. That was weird.
Yeah.
Anyway, Kevin Bacon, poor man.
So this was I watched about 6-7 months ago. In fact, it's not an enjoyable film to watch.
But it's an incredible film, yeah. Isn't it? I thought Mads Mikkelsen was phenomenal in it.
Yeah.
And actually, the little girl, I thought, I've rarely seen better truthful performances for what's quite a difficult role to play.
Yeah. I thought it was very good. I can't remember that well. It's quite interesting. It's terrifying people using this sort of one of those words, isn't it? So like a paedophilia or racism.
I don't think they ever use the word paedophile in the film.
Oh, don't they?
Interestingly, yeah, they don't. They don't. It's never. That's never mentioned.
Yeah.
You know, it's just slowly. You know, people have no proof or no evidence, but the very fact that the rumour has gone round is the thing that destroys his life.
And yeah.
He's acquitted, you know, and that doesn't help.
Yeah.
You know?
In the background, Buddy's now playing with some more toys.
Well, he's digging in his toy box amongst his noisier toys.
Yes. It's really interesting that they're saying that kids are aware of, like, our teachers saying that kids are aware now of these certain things that they can have power over their teachers. They can have such power, you know, that and they should be able to. Obviously, there are cases where there are teachers who are paedophiles who, you know, so it's the other way around. But I remember just being on a bus once, seeing that used, seeing it go wrong when I first moved to London about 12 years ago, when I got on the bus, and then there are two sort of teenage black girls got on and they're being really aggressive.
Yeah.
And I think some bloke told them to be quiet, or they sort of pushed him and he pushed them back, and they started accusing him. Downstairs, the bottom of the bus, some people hadn't heard this thing. I'd seen it all because I was in a seat towards the front. And then they started accusing him of being racist, and there was nothing he did that was racist at all. That they were just being arseholes, and he was acting as if you would towards another. And they started shouting, "This guy's racist!" And then the bus driver stopped the bus, and other people started chiming in against this bloke.
Wow!
Because they used that buzzword, and as soon as you call someone a racist, they're automatically they're in the wrong. Yeah. They're the criminal here.
And you also, you know, there's a basic sort of psychological thing where you look at that person and their discomfort, you read as guilt.
Well, that's what was interesting. In a sort of microcosm of it, I saw the incident, and luckily, and I was about to start to say something because I've sort of chipped in before. Someone just in front of me said no, he wasn't being racist at all, and sort of completely was on his side and sort of saw that thing from his perspective.
Yes.
But it was a microcosm of it. Someone had shed racism, and the other people hadn't seen the previous act. Automatically sided on these two black girl sides, even though it wasn't about race at all.
Yeah.
But it's fascinating seeing people who didn't see what happened.
So you've seen the hunt on a bus, like
I've seen
the
race,
hunt crossed with speed.
I've seen a hunt about racism on a bus in London about 12 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah, and it was only about 5 minutes long. I don't think I
explained
that very well.
What happened in the end? What happened? Was the guy thrown off the bus?
No, it was a general sort of argument. It soon became apparent after about 3 or 4 minutes that these girls were just arseholes.
Right.
And they sort of went upstairs, and it was just sort of one of those odd, not proper endings.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't a proper ending.
It then just hangs over everyone in silence until you get off the bus.
I wish, I said out loud, I wish this had ended properly, because I don't feel... I want a proper moral ending to this
incident.
It turned
out Danny Boyle was standing behind you, and he just leant into your ear and just went, "And in the end..."
If someone had said that, they would have been perfect. I think I'm getting a bit off topic now. So what else do you think about the hunt then?
Well, a couple of things. It's a spoiler, I guess, is one of the things I think, and I'm in two minds about whether I share it or not. But, I'll say it and we can always cut it.
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. It's been out for 6 months, right? So do watch it. Skip forward 30 seconds. The one thing I did not like about the film was I find it a very, very lazy scriptwriter's trope of set up a lovely dog to kill the lovely dog. And it's seen as a filmic trope of a consequence-free killing of a child.
Yeah.
But the fact it's always consequence-free, no one ever does anything about the fact someone's murdered a dog. I know I'm a dog owner, so I'm probably more sensitive.
You can hear Buddy in the background eating his bone.
I see it as such a lazy thing to do, because American films do it all the time.
Yeah.
And I thought this film was better than that. But the rest of it, I thought, was absolutely stunning.
My other one question was it a bit too... what would be maybe more interesting if Mads Mikkelsen had played a weirdo? Because the fact is, Mads Mikkelsen is an attractive... sort of well-adjusted...
He's a bit odd-looking. I mean, he's played villains mostly in his life.
But
he's got that twitchy eye thing going on.
Can you imagine if it was a proper weirdo who had no friends?
Well, they played that card a bit where he was... he'd split up with his wife and lived alone in a big house, and so he already was a bit of a solitary figure in the village, and so that fed into people's paranoia about him, of whether we can really know who he is. But it's, I mean, terrifying. For me, I found it absolutely sort of chilling, like, in quite disturbing, anxiety-inducing, of just how, on a knife's edge, stupid people are to being dangerous. You know? Yeah. Or even just not just unsophisticated people, people who don't think things through, how close they are to just being a mob. You know, it takes the smallest thing to push them over into actually rejecting basic humanity.
You can see Twitter is quite interesting because you get mob people on that.
Yeah, yeah.
There was just, I mean, there was someone on X Factor, I noticed, I was looking at last night, a performer called James Arthur, who said some really ridiculous things, become really unpopular and become like a hate figure.
Right.
And he was trending, and I looked because there was a Ask Questions with James Arthur. He's just basically someone who's won a singing reality show X Factor here in the UK. And I think he got into an argument, said some inappropriate things online, and become this sort of hate symbol. And then I looked at this art, he obviously did a Q&A online. So I clicked on the link on Twitter that was trending. I said, I don't want my mum and dad talking about it. And it was just people giving him abuse, like proper abuse, which is actually a mob. This is a mob of people just attacking someone they don't know and saying...
And probably weren't around to read the original posts in the first place. They're just joining in.
And they're saying really, posting really horrible things.
Yeah.
And retweeting and saying, this is what you look like. And probably having a bit of experience of being, you know, having been in done little bits on TV, is terrifying that could happen to you.
Yeah, yeah.
But these people didn't realise if what they were doing were just proper internet bullying.
Yeah.
And that's acceptable.
Yeah. I mean, it's watching films like The Hunt that, you know, it makes you really sort of appreciate that tenet of innocent until proven guilty, but how few people actually live by that tenet.
Yeah.
No, really chilling. Like a properly frightening, very real story.
Yeah. I thought it was good, but I don't think it's going to win the thingy.
I've not seen any of the others yet, so I couldn't say. But tricky subject matter. But I thought handled very, very well.
How many Davids?
I'd probably give it 8. I think.
Yeah, I think I'd give it 8 Marics from what I can remember. I think I gave it 8 Marics last year
at the time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Whilst the credits rolled, you looked at Mads in the eyes and went, "That's 8 Marics, mate."
Yeah. Because that's the only way to judge films, just purely on a numeric
basis.
Yeah, that's it.
Absolutely.
Ultimate truth.
All right, well, that's us for this week. We haven't done any of the things, so I'll do all the admin at the end. If you'd like to write to us and have your email read out and potentially discussed in a future episode, then why not email us, dearfilmfandango@gmail.com. if you'd like to share anything just with the rest of the listeners during the week, then go on to facebook.com/filmfandango, or you can get all of the latest episodes and try and get a response from us on Twitter @filmfandango, or you're more likely to get a response, actually, if you tweet us in person, which is @MaricLarwood or @MrDavidReed. And we do this entire podcast for free. So if you'd like to contribute towards our running costs, then you can do so by going to filmfandango.co.uk and following the links from there. And to everyone who has done, thank you very much. It's very much appreciated.
You should read the news.
Thanks, mate.
We'll see you next week, or we won't see you ever.
No, you'll hear us next week.
Keep watching the films.
Bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.